The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, Dr. Ray Wally is with us for our weekly medical consultation. And what are the chances that any man listening to this item is going to, at some stage in his life, experience and undergo prostate cancer?
Prostate cancer is the second most common cancer in males in Ireland. There are about 3,000 diagnosed every year, cancer of the prostate, and about 1 in 7 will be diagnosed with it in their lifetime.
1 in 7 men listening will get a diagnosis at some stage in their lifetime. And how likely is it to kill them?
It's unlikely that it kills them. The greater likelihood is they're going to die of natural causes. However, there are a certain percentage that will die, unfortunately, of prostate cancer.
Unfortunately, I do know people who have died of prostate cancer, and I think it's something that really people, men, do fear enormously.
Definitely, and unfortunately, males are not the people who go to the doctor when they should do, so it's certainly a topic we should be discussing, and bringing more light onto it and getting males to go and seek consultations with your general practitioners to discuss it.
Okay, so you need to catch it early, don't you?
If you have somebody who is symptomatic, certainly they should be going to a GP. So what are the symptoms? So basically you could have somebody who is getting up at night to pass water out of the ordinary. Unfortunately, if you have a few pints of beer, that'll have a diuresis effect, makes you pee. So we're talking about something that's out of the ordinary. As you get older, gradually your prostate enlarges. Your prostate is a gland around the urethra, and it's something which produces fluid to bathe semen in. And as we get older, it naturally gets larger anyway. So as a natural aging process, we can get symptomatology. So if you do get symptoms, and those being what we call terminal dribbling, so lovely conversation at 5:30 in the afternoon, when you go to the pee, you might have a little bit of dribble after you thought you had finished. And often people get a bit of soiling of their underpants or their pyjamas as a result. So terminal dribbling, getting up at night to pass water, we said nocturia. An urge, I say, if you basically are going more frequently during the day. And if you get a mixture of all these symptoms, you should certainly, or some of them you just need clarification, you go and talk to your general practitioner.
And what happens then? Are there special tests that need to be done?
If somebody presents with symptoms, we will discuss with them on whether what blood tests we need to do. Together with, obviously, we might do a urinalysis to make sure they don't have an infection. That being said, if a urinary infection is in a male, it is an automatic reason to be referred to a urologist to be investigated for, to make sure you have nothing else going on. So if we end up going down the road, having had a consultation, and we're doing a PSA, on people who are symptomatic, we generally will do a PSA. We explain to them the nature that the PSA, which is a prostate-specific antigen, blood test specific to the prostate, we can get false negatives and false positives with the test.
And how often does that happen?
The problem is that it isn't looked upon as a great screening tool, because you do have a high false positive rate and you do have a high false negative rate. So, for example, you could ask the question, why aren't we organising screening programs on this? So, for example, we have a screening program for breast cancer in women from 50 years of age onwards. We have a screening program where people get an occult blood test for stool cancer or for bowel cancer. We have a screening test for cervical smears, and all of them satisfy specific criteria set down by the World Health Organization called Wilson criteria. And the problem with PSA at the moment, it has been looked at in the US Preventative Services Task Force study in the US, it's been looked at by the Cochrane database in the UK, and it's been looked at by other methods, and they have found that if you brought in a screening process, so for example, if we give you an example of America, they looked at massive studies throughout the world, and they found that out of the 1,000 people who may be offered screening, 240 got positive results. This is data which was looked at after the event.
And so is 240 way too large, is it?
Well, out of the 240, only 100 showed a definite cancer. And out of the 240 then, 80 chose surgery or radiation cancer. Out of that group, 50 ended up with erectile dysfunction, 15 ended up urinary incontinence. Only 3 avoided cancer to other organs, 1 avoided death from prostate cancer, and 5 died from prostate cancer anyway. But that doesn't throw much light on the people who ended up with complications from the investigation, because it has a high false positivity and a high false negative rate.
So then what can you do? I mean, if there's a suspicion that a doctor has, what tests can be done to let you know whether you have the cancer or not?
So we're talking two different things here. If somebody presents with symptoms, they should be going to their GP. We're going to be doing the test. We're going to be talking about the positive and negatives. We're talking about screening, which is different. It has not been elucidated to justify screening. Now, they are looking at it again. So, for example, what they're doing now in the UK is they're putting 5 million sterling into involving MRIs of the prostate, together with probably the PSA. I haven't seen the protocol on this, but they are looking at it. It isn't something which has been thrown away. I know that there is another group.
Sorry, so hold on. I'm just getting a bit confused here about the difference between screening and testing and stuff. So when men hit a certain age, the likelihood of having prostate cancer goes up. And as a lot of people argue, from the age of 50, you should be screened like you do for breast cancer. What you're saying is that this screening, the PSA, may not actually give you a reliable result and may have side effects. But you will do the PSA if you have all of the various conditions, such as the going to the toilet regularly, the things that are telltale signs. It's only then that you would go and do the PSA, is it?
We'll be doing them on an acute basis rather than a screening basis, because you're trying to figure out, has this person got a difficulty? Obviously, a strong family history of prostate cancer.
There's a reason for doing it.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, there's a debate out there, and it's important to have that debate, and it's important we throw more light on men's health, which, as we said, men don't go and seek consultations. But the question is, should you screen or not screen? And that is an argument happening within medicine internationally all the time.
What about the hereditary nature of prostate cancer? Because isn't it the case that if a father or if an uncle or something has had it, then the likelihood of you having it? And then one that surprised me, I was told recently, that if, for example, your mother has had breast cancer, that you may also have a higher likelihood of prostate cancer.
And we're talking glandular cancer. Like, we're talking breast cancer, we're talking ovarian cancer, we're talking prostate cancer, all glandular cancer. And basically, those people are a different group because they have a risk factor. So you're literally going in and talking to your general practitioner. And the GP will seek guidance in regard to, from a specialist in regard to, because we as GPs will not have all the data. But basically, we don't advocate. So I have people who have no symptoms coming into me at 40 years of age, and I would not advocate doing a PSA, prostate-specific antigen, in those individuals.
Okay, what about as well, is there cases that when somebody is quite old, where sometimes the decision is taken not to treat, not to have invasive surgery or other types of treatment, because basically it can be managed while a person lives out the rest of their lives?
Well, I don't think anybody, it's down to a weighing scale of what is the appropriate treatment. Like, what we deal with when we look at these studies, we deal with absolute risks, and we look at systematic reviews and evidence-based medicine and looking at decision aids and what is the best treatment for that individual, you know, such that the patient is part of the informed choice. So that if you have somebody who's quite elderly, the main thing that they want is quality of life. If the treatment, which is quite radical, is not going to lengthen their life and probably shorten their life, that will be discussed with them. You know, gone are the days of paternalistic care whereby, you know, the most important person there in that decision is the patient. And often we'll be advising them to bring some family member in, because most studies show you only hear 40% if you're well of what the doctor is saying anyway, because it is a stressful event. Even if a doctor goes to a doctor, they will tend to bring somebody with them. But, you know, it is down to a weighing scale, risk and benefits. So if the risk outweighs the benefit, we don't do it. But if the benefit outweighs the risk, and the person has decided, because it's not down to the fact that they just accept it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ray Wally, for joining us for our weekly medical consultation here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.